I think it was a release of so much tension that had built up over two decades, not just with the Capitals fan base, but with the city at large. Not a lot of sports joy in Washington. It's a moment that we haven't really had in these parts. And even though it's after just two rounds and there's still two rounds to go, I think everybody in this city embracing the moment, the fact it was Pittsburgh, the fact it was in Pittsburgh, I don't think that was lost on people here. They loved every minute of it. They're hoping for some more.
We're kicking off the podcast with John Walton, the play-by-play voice of the Washington Capitals, where, Elliot, euphoria reigns.
You know, John, I've lived 43 of my 47 years in Toronto, and our sports history is such that they almost expect to lose. I was watching all the coverage of Washington in the days leading up to that Game 6, and I got the sense that those fans and that city almost expected the Capitals to lose.
There is definitely a feeling of that around here. There's no question. And I think some of that becomes inherent, not just because of the Caps. And they certainly have made their contributions and arguably more than most. But the Nationals don't get out of the first round. The Redskins haven't played relevant football in two decades for the most part. An odd playoff game here or two, never going very far. And it almost has become part of the culture here. And I think there is some of that. I did sense after Game 5, and I'd said it on the air in the third period, looking around at the people underneath the booth at Capital One Arena when the Caps come storming back, they get four in the third. Wait a minute. Like, this doesn't happen this way. Pittsburgh comes in, eats our lunch, and leaves. And, you know, that's where I said it's okay to believe, people. When you're looking at what's going on down below, it's almost started to take hold, I think, with some people in that Game 5. And then when it got to Pittsburgh and the way the game started, even like, oh, Backstrom can't play and, okay, this is going to be bad. And it wasn't. And they played the style of game they had to play, they did. And it was defensive in nature. It wasn't sexy by any means. It got the job done. They shut down Pittsburgh, especially in that second period. They looked good doing it.
You're on the team flight home. This is what I really want to hear from you. What happened on that flight? What was it like to go home eliminating the Penguins?
I can tell you that the mood in walking out of the arena first, the guys getting on the bus, one of the first people I saw when I got out in the loading dock was Evgeny Kuznetsov. I gave him a big hug. I just said, thank you for letting me have that call. And he was laughing as he always does. The mood was very good, but it still felt focused to me. I mean, Barry Trotz came back, the media and the trainers were in the back, and he came back and talked with us and shook hands, and, you know, we're all saying congratulations. And it was different than winning a first-round series for sure, but it was not the hooping and hollering that you might expect. It was handshakes. The card game is still going on. They know that the job isn't done yet, that the task at hand is now to go beat Tampa Bay, but it was a release. I think Ovechkin on the ice in the look to the ceiling and his arms stretched out and the sigh of relief that you could see, I think everyone in this city, everyone in this organization felt it, and I think that carried over into the flight home, absolutely, but it was grab a hockey soda, get your notes together, and start getting ready for round three, and I think for everyone involved, a few more smiles maybe than usual, but it really wasn't that different. I think that's a good sign.
John, maybe the obvious answer is, and maybe the right answer is Alex Ovechkin. I've always had a soft spot for Barry Trotz, so I may lean that way. But from your point of view, which player enjoyed the sweetest handshake when the guys did hands at the end of all of it?
Ovechkin v. Crosby, and it's not even close. I mean, think about it. I mean, Canada has had their way with Russia whenever those two guys have been involved. Washington has been at the receiving end of a lot of bad series with Pittsburgh and some heartbreak. Alex has always been the guy. Forget there are 17 other skaters. Forget that Nick Backstrom has been here for all of it. Even Carlson has been here through most of it, Holtby now too. But those guys, that's never where the focus is. And I think that's where that exhale, and I've watched that part of the video, I can't tell you how many times, because I think for him to get into that position, finally, to be able to walk through that line, to skate through that line, and that meeting with Sid that has never gone well for him. It never has. And for all the success that Sidney Crosby has had and, quite frankly, deserved for the way that his career, that franchise, you have to have all the respect in the world for what they've done. And what Washington did was end a two-time Stanley Cup run that was trying to become a third and carve out a little bit more history. I felt best for Alex Ovechkin, but Barry Trotz is a close second because in 20 years. He's never been in that position either, of course. It was great to see. It's going to be great to see him behind that bench in round three.
I always ask this of broadcasters in key moments. Did you have something written down that you wanted to say if the Capitals won the series?
Zero. Nothing written down, nothing planned. Anything that came out of my mouth was completely spontaneous. I think the only time in my career that I could say that, at least a little, I've never written anything down. I've trusted myself to be able to capture the moment the best way you can. And then honestly, you're hoping for the best. The hope for the best comes with the highlights like Ovechkin sitting on 499, 599. You're certainly, it's always in the back of your head, man. I'd be lying if I said it wasn't, but you don't know how it's going to play out. Is it going to be Alex Chiasson? Would it be a goal like that? He had the goal in regulation where it sneaks through and it's a fourth line guy. And, you know, do you have something different to say for that as opposed to Ovechkin and Kuznetsov teaming up? I'm not one to really plan something like that, but I think the hope is that you want to get it right. I spent a lot of years in my younger days right out of college. I was the public address announcer for the Cincinnati Reds. And I sat next to the official scorer for my entire time there. His name was Glenn Sample. And he told me that there are two people that are probably maybe the most concerned about the outcome when there's a highlight, like Pete Rose was chasing 41-92 back in the day. All he was praying for was a clean hit. Like, you're hoping for whatever the moment is, that it's clear, it's concise, it happens. And it's not something like an official score. Was that a hit or an error? Was it a tip in front? Did it go off a skate? Did it go off somebody else? It happens so fast. I think for broadcasters, it's kind of the same, where you're just hoping that it comes to you very quickly. You're hoping that you're able to see it if the game moves so quickly. But as far as the description, I think the obvious was the elation of beating Pittsburgh, and anything else that came after that. I didn't actually listen to it until the next day when I was given an interview. I didn't go back and listen to it. I've heard it a lot now, but I didn't even hear it until the next day. Watch it happen.
Yeah, I'm always interested in hearing broadcasters talk about their craft, and I want to give you a very specific scenario, and I'm curious what your answer will be here, John. It's Game 7, Stanley Cup Final. The Washington Capitals are up 4-1 over the Vegas Golden Knights at home, and they are going to win the Stanley Cup. It's 1 minute left. The place is going nuts. For 60 seconds, John, do you say anything?
Well, you do. I think what you do, and I guess I did have that opportunity a couple of times when I was with Hershey, and in that exact scenario where the game, if it's tied and it's late and it's in overtime, there's no room to talk about anything. It's in all three Hershey championships that I was a part of, every game ended in a lopsided 4-1, 5-1, whatever it was at the end. So there was always time for that. And it reflective, I think, if you're pressing me on what that would probably sound like, I think that moment would be, for the most part, focusing, I think, on people who have been either with this organization the longest, the fans who have watched and suffered the longest, envisioning what a celebration would be and mixing it in with a play down in the last 2, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever it is, if it ends up being a game. But, you know, that anticipation is there and you know it's coming. I think you want to capture the spirit and the emotion of a franchise that dates back to 1974 that had the most humble of beginnings by winning 8 games the entire first season in the league. And now if they win 8 games, the Stanley Cup champions. I think the people who came before us, I can tell you one name you're going to hear is Ron Weber, who never got to do that and still comes to games. He is the voice of the Capitals. I just sit in the chair. He's in the Hall of Fame, and he should be, and he still is at almost every home game. He comes to the booth, and he told me before game one in the first round, he came in and he said, "May you have what I was unable to get." And that is that call at the end of the Capitals winning a Stanley Cup. And that has stuck with me. Ron has been a tremendous friend and a guy who is as Caps as they come and saw a lot of this history unfold when it wasn't so good. Would love to see it for him. For everyone around this organization and for the fans that have waited so long. It's something that reflective of that, I think, is almost a must in that position.
The Washington Capitals win the Stanley Cup. Have you ever rehearsed saying that, John?
I've had it go through my head a couple times, but I think that's and never in any serious capacity. I think once you get to this point, I mean, I think every team that's left says, hey, you know what, if we win 4 games, we're in the Stanley Cup final. And I think for a broadcaster, the fun thing for me is that a guy who came from Hershey, the guy who preceded me in the job, I was there for 9 years, the guy who was there for the eight before me was Dave Mishkin. So I've known Dave for 20 years, and I wouldn't have had the job without Dave. He led me to Doug Yingst when he got the job in Tampa Bay. He's been a close friend for 2 decades, longer now, and we know one of us is going and one of us isn't, and we're going to have a lot of fun with that, I'm sure. But Dave's had a taste of it. I have not, but however it goes in the third round, I hope if it's not me, I hope it's him. Those would be great words to say for anybody. I think you can't do this job and not think of saying those words at some point in your career.
You are slightly more understated than Dave Mishkin, I can tell you that.
This is definitely true.
You know, I was thinking about this as Jeff asked the question, John. John's signature saying when the Capitals win a game is good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Polk check away, and now the counter. Here come the Caps. Kuznetsov gets loose. Evgeny coming down the middle. A shot, and it comes in over. He scores! He scores! Evgeny Kuznetsov wins it for Washington! It's off to the third round! The Demons have been exercised! Good morning! Good afternoon! And good night, Pittsburgh! We're going to Tampa Bay! The Capitals have done it!
I'm just going through this in my head, something along the lines of, it isn't good night because the party's just beginning, or something like that. Like, I don't need to tell you how to do your job. You know what you're doing. But that's the first thing that popped into my head.
You know what? You bring up actually a really good point. And I started spitting that out when I was in Hershey, and I actually wasn't even going to bring it to Washington. And Tarik El-Bashir, who's now with NBC Sports Washington, was writing for the Washington Post at the time I got the job here. And it was the first question he asked me, because Hershey's only a couple hours away, and a lot of our games are on TV, and the Caps were not winning, and the Bears were winning Calder Cups, and a lot of my games were being broadcast in Washington. So it was a question he asked right away. I was like, well, maybe it should stick around. In that moment, that would be making it about me and inserting something in there that I think in somewhere after the call, I think it will still be there. But I think it's very simple. It's the words that this has been, 43 years in the making as the Washington Capitals are Stanley Cup champions, something along those lines, I'm sure, because in that moment, you're not just representing either me as a broadcaster or even the fans or the front office. This is a moment bigger than the Washington Capitals. It's just that the Caps get to take part in it, and they actually get to be that team for the first time ever. I don't know that I will be interjecting that quite in the same way. It might be a little deferred. I think there's a bigger, better moment to try and capture there.
You know what, John? Like, I'm just one guy, and I would never profess to tell anybody how to do their job, but those fans, they love you. Like, I watch it. I watch your Twitter feed. I see all the stuff that comes in. This is just me, and any Capitals fan who listens to this, Jeff, can decide how they feel about it.
Okay.
But if I was a Washington Capitals fan and the Capitals won the Stanley Cup and John Walton didn't do his call,
oh, yeah,
I'd be like, Walton, where the hell is my call?
See, now what you're doing, Elliot, is you're planting the seed, because all of this stuff is subliminal anyway. Like, you know what? Guys come by and they try, they'll say a name wrong or something. They'll do it on purpose. They're like, don't do that, because I'm going to end up saying that later. I'm not even going to mean to do it. You're planting that seed there. Maybe it comes out different. I hope for Washington fans and for this organization, I hope we have a reason to find out the answer to that question.
John, I just wanted to
quit
ask you.
Quit leading the witness,
yeah,
by the way.
Okay, I'll stop badgering you. John, the other thing I wanted to ask you is you did a huge game at the Olympics this year. You were the voice of women's hockey for NBC. You did that gold medal game, which was a fantastic hockey game. What was bigger for you, calling the gold medal game at the Olympics or calling Washington's victory over Pittsburgh?
I think I have to give the edge to the home team here, only because it's something you're so invested in.
Yeah.
And with Pittsburgh, I mean, in Korea, one of my favorite moments, and it may fly under the radar a little bit in both Canada and the United States, in calling the first goal ever scored by the unified team for Korea, the mood in the building, two nights before, had Kim Jong-un's sister down in the seats right below us, and you had the South Korean president, and there are security guys with really big guns right over the broadcast platform, which was a first for me. but the crowd that was so excited to be able to, if they ever counted across the red line, I mean, it was like, oh, this might be it. No, it's not going to be it. They didn't get many scoring chances, and they were so excited and intrigued by the game. I mean, I felt a real growth of the game when that was happening. And, you know, when you're a long way from home and seeing something like that, it was really moving for me. And when Randy Houston Griffin scored it, it was really great. But I think just given the depth of when you sit in the chair that I do for the Capitals now and knowing the history and knowing the heartbreak, I watched the Eastern Epic with LaFontaine with my dad when I was 14. I had no tie to Washington. I'd grown up in Minnesota. I remember watching that game into a fourth overtime at 2 a.m. And I remember saying to him how much it would stink to be a Capitals fan right now. Little did I know that I would be sitting here all these years later. But that's where a lot of this pain started. And they getting over in the playoffs and winning those kinds of games when more often than not they lose. That's the depth of it you feel when you sit here and you talk to fans and you get to know the people in the city who've been around here a lot longer than I have, and knowing how much it would mean to so many people who live in Maryland, in D.C., in Virginia, who have followed this team, some of them from the beginning and some who moved here and didn't know what a hockey puck was when they got here and became season ticket holders because they moved here and they never left. Some who take it with them when they do leave. It's a transient town, military town, government town. This fan base is far reaching and it has created a lot of pain perhaps, but the release we hope is coming. And boy, it's nice to be able to be talking about a realistic chance when you're 8 wins away and playing in the third round.
John, you've been part of a couple of huge calls so far this year. Best of luck and hope there's still 2 more still to come. Thanks for doing this, John.
I sure hope so. Thanks, guys.
Take care, John.
And with that, Elliot, we welcome you to 31 Thoughts, the podcast, brought to you by the all-new 2018 GMC Terrain.
So I had just been let go by St. Louis's goaltending coach, and I'm sitting at home and following the hockey games from the night before. I had sent out a couple of tweets, just something funny or something silly, and next thing I know, my phone rings, and it's Elliot Friedman, saying he follows my account, and he asked me if I could bring my Twitter account to television, and the opportunity was born. That's how I got into media. So I owe a lot to Elliot Friedman for getting me the opportunity. But what I didn't know about Elliot is that he has a new diet every time I meet him. As good as he is in hockey, nutrition is not his forte. So I want to know what diet Elliot is doing now. Is it gluten-free? Is it carbless?
That's pretty funny, actually.
What is it? And as for Jeff Merrick, again, one of the best people in hockey. He knows everything about hockey. Just ask him.
Tries hard, good guy, loves the game. Thanks, Corey. What's your diet this week, Frege?
Just try not to eat pizza during the doubleheaders.
You guys still have the wheels going? Late night?
Yeah. Actually, you know what? Since we don't have any doubleheaders anymore,
that's it.
That's probably over, so it should be even easier.
All right. Well, we wish you the best on that. We wish the remainder of teams that are competing for the Stanley Cup all the best. As we record this podcast, there's only one series yet to be decided, Nashville and Winnipeg. But let me wide brush this one for you real quick. Every division winner is through.
Yep.
Outside, and we'll see what happens with Nashville and Winnipeg. Does that make it a disappointing playoffs? Because we don't have the upsets. We don't have the Cinderella. Every team that was supposed to win has won.
I disagree in the sense that we do have one very big Cinderella. Vegas. And even though they won their division and they're in the semifinal, they still count as a Cinderella.
What would be the...
God help the GM of Seattle if they win the Stanley Cup.
That's what everybody's saying now. You just made it tough for everybody. Well, I want to thank John Walton for stopping by to kick off the podcast today. What would be the more interesting final for you? George McPhee versus the Washington Capitals or Philip Forsberg versus the Washington Capitals?
Well, as a Canadian, I have a slight rooting interest for Winnipeg. It's good for the company, too. I'm not going to deny it. But I'll tell you this, I made a comment like that about a couple months ago, and I will tell you that Vegas-Washington thing would not be a laughing matter to the people involved. Like, those feelings, I think, are still pretty raw.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much they'd even talk about it, to be perfectly honest. So there would be a lot of personal feelings in a series between the Capitals and the Golden Knights. Question about it.
In media, I cheer for the best story. And yes. To me, one of the best ones would have been Marc-Andre Fleury versus Matt Murray. And that is not going to happen because Pittsburgh, as we know, has been eliminated by the Washington Capitals. So scratch one off the fantasy storyboard. But Vegas has compelling storyline there. Certainly Nashville does. And that's compounded when you throw in the Barry Trotz factor as well. So there's still the potential for some fantastic storylines. But to your point, I got a lot of time for people like Paul Maurice. I got a lot of time for people like Kevin Cheveldayoff. I got a lot of time for a lot of people on that Winnipeg Jets squad. So I'm with you. I wink at Winnipeg knowing that perhaps there might be better stories out there from a storyline point of view. But interesting with Washington getting past the Pittsburgh Penguins, and we'll dovetail with John Walton there. Whenever I think of Washington, and John mentioned this in the 74-75 season, it took until I think it was like game 40 until they won their first road game, was in March against the California Seals. And it was, you know, euphoria in the Washington Capitals dressing room. Tommy Williams turned over a garbage can and they all passed it around the dressing room like they had won the Stanley Cup because they had finally won their first road game. And this was, you know, for a long time, a team that was early on was, you know, one of the laughingstocks around the NHL. They were doing what a traditional expansion team was supposed to do.
Lose.
Washington did it. Kansas City did it. They came in at the same time. Vegas comes in. And they not only did they win their division, but they're into the conference final in the West. But then, you know, the Capitals were that team that going back to 2010, I remember, you know, watching the Hockey Night in Canada preview show, and there's PJ Stock saying Washington in three over the Montreal Canadiens. We've been talking about them being perennial cup favorites and contenders, you know, going back to the year that Chicago ended up beating the Philadelphia Flyers. This is a fan base, Elliot, that's been false started a number of different times.
In the interview with John, we talk about like fan bases that are kind of defeatist. Yeah. And I was looking at the Washington Post online, and they were showing of the big four teams, you know, the football team, the Nationals, the Wizards, and the Capitals, like how many times they had failed to get past that point. And everywhere you looked, like all the Washington media outlets, the TV stations, the news channels, it was all about, this is how often we've blown these chances.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, like, it's hard not to be impressed with the Capitals this year. They really thought last year was their year. They were so devastated by that loss. You know, how long was it until McClellan even did his end of season media conference last year? He took his time. That doesn't happen too much in hockey. They weren't supposed to be as deep. And you look at this series, game five, they fall behind 1-0. They could have folded. They didn't. Game six, they go into overtime in Pittsburgh. They could have folded. They didn't. They didn't have Backstrom. Wilson got suspended. They had every excuse to lose. I don't think they've talked to Trotz about an extension all year.
Yeah.
They had every excuse to lose, and they didn't.
But the weird thing about it, too, is you could say that after the first four games, they were the better team in all four. You could have made the case they should have swept Pittsburgh. You could make that case outside of one period. Outside of that, I think it was game four in the third where Pittsburgh just said, okay, enough of this.
Yes.
They were the better team in all four
games. For sure. But the better team doesn't always win.
That's why I said to myself, man, I can only imagine being in that Washington room and saying to myself, do we have to go through this again? We've been the better team for four games and we're tied at twos. What's going on here? This again?
Again. That was the Washington team that was not supposed to win. And the other thing, too, about the Capitals is they don't play short series. Like, if you look at them historically in the Ovechkin era, how many really short series have they had?
I can't think off the top of
my head. They lost one to Tampa, 4-1. I think that was in 2011. But other than that, it's like all 6 and 7 gamers. Like, they never blow anybody out. They never get blown out. It's always a twist and a turn.
See, the theory this year is, and I heard this from a couple of different people, that Washington was a more dangerous creature this year because they didn't get to cruise through the schedule. They didn't get to blow teams out for 82 games, that they had to claw and scratch for every single point, and they were going to be, quote-unquote, more playoff-ready than ever before. That was one of the theories. Do you buy it?
I do think you reach a point in your life where you say, what else can happen to me? And I think the Capitals kind of reached that point this year. After last year, like, that was the year they were supposed to win.
Loaded up.
So I think they still knew they were going to be good. They have good players.
Won the division.
But I don't think they expected to win the division. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if the honest truth is they didn't expect to win the division. But all of a sudden, like, you reach a point where you're like, what else can hurt me? Like, you're almost free, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just get the sense for some of those guys, it was like, you know, what else can happen to us? I think Trotz is like that.
The most dangerous opponent. I mean, you can see it in all sports. One of the most obvious ones is Buster Douglas against Mike Tyson. The most dangerous guy is the guy that has nothing to lose. That's already been through it before.
I don't know if I would have picked that one as a guy who was going in relaxed. I'd be worried if I was in Mike Tyson's prime, I was going to get killed. But
that story going in, I mean, loses his mom. He's not expected to do anything. It's in Japan. Like, there was nothing for Buster there other than to be a punching bag for Mike Tyson.
Look at this. Buster not intimidated. He wants to keep it going. Mike, actually, his legs. You notice his legs in these wide shots. He doesn't have good bounce in his knees. Buster's legs actually look fresher to me. See Mike the way he went back in his heels, doesn't have the good balance. His legs together as Buster's landing these.
Oh, nice uppercut by Buster Douglas. Look at this. He's knocked Mike Tyson down for the first time in his career. Mike Tyson hits the canvas. He's in big trouble. He may not be able to recover. It's up to 7 and 8. He's not going to make it. Unbelievable.
Who's the most dangerous opponent? The one that's got nothing to lose, right?
Yeah.
I listened to Trotz's media conference after Game 6 where he's like walking around all day and I think we're going to win, right? And here's a guy who doesn't have a contract for next year. He's an optimistic guy, I think, generally by nature. You know, why not be optimistic? Why not have a good feeling about it? I think a lot of those guys are like that. I mean, I think you reach a point where you say, what else can this team do to us? They can't do anything to us that they haven't done to us already.
I always wonder, too, and I'm not saying that Barry Trotz isn't coaching, but there is that aspect of let's go play. Like, and, you know, Bruce Boudreau's had this with his teams for a long time as well. I wonder how different the game would be right now if there was less coaching and less coaches. I suspect it would be a more entertaining game. I wonder if you would get better teams. Because, listen, these guys all know how to play. I mean, how many times have you heard this before? You know, don't think when you're out there. You're a better player when you don't think and you just react. I wonder how much different it would be if there was more of that, just go play. Washington's had that before. Dallas had that for a spell under Lindy Ruff. I mean, I always wonder about the game if there was less coaches. And I blame Fred Shearer for that. And I love Fred Shearer, who's the first to bring the assistant coach Mike Nikolic aboard.
Yes.
And then look where we're at now. Other side of the rink, Washington Capitals, what happens now with the Pittsburgh Penguins as we start to do autopsies for some of these teams as they bid adieu?
Well, part of me is like, you can't overanalyze this. They've just won 2 championships in a row. They were bound to lose sooner or later. Nobody's winning 19 playoff series in a row like the New York Islanders did ever again. So I think you've got a couple of questions here. Actually, I think you have 3. Like, Matt Murray's a great goalie. Something happened with his glove hand in that series. So you're looking at it and you're saying, okay, what do we got to fix here? You've got a Chris Letang question. I think Chris Letang is a heck of a player. We had a really strange year in a year where the Penguins kind of tested the market on him. And, you know, I have no desire to kick at Phil Kessel. I think, you know, some people think that whenever you bring up a question about Kessel in Toronto, you're just putting the boots to him. I really have no desire to do that. But when the coach comes out and says, I'm not going to talk about injuries, but Kessel's wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
That's like a 5-alarm blaze. That's a, we're not making an excuse for this. And what do I think? I think they'd probably look at it and say, we want to solve this problem ourselves because Phil Kessel's been a very important part of 2 Stanley Cup champions.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does mean is it's going to be a summer of Kessel and that quote hanging over him.
So you think they might do something with Phil Kessel, i.e., well, here becomes the question, has he played his last game as a Pittsburgh Penguin? Should we go that far with it?
I think it's too soon to say that. But the thing is, like, Jim Rutherford has proven, like, he'll do anything to win.
Yeah.
And he's a creative guy. He's proven he's creative. He will find a way to get things done. The one thing I learned this year at the deadline, because a number of GMs told me this, is how many players in this league, Jeff, are really untouchable?
Off the top of my head.
Connor McDavid is untouchable.
Oh, a handful.
Yeah.
Sidney Crosby's untouchable. Connor McDavid is untouchable.
Yep.
Who
else is untouchable?
Rasmus Dahlin is untouchable.
Yeah, he's probably untouchable. The number one draft pick is untouchable. Malkin, I think, would be untouchable. Ovechkin, I think, is untouchable. We wondered about it last year, but now we know that, you know, he's back.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is they're going to look at it. I'm sure they'll look and see what the market is, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was back. The one thing I admire about the Penguins is they're honest. How many times do you see them fighting with each other on the bench? Or
a lot.
That video of Hornqvist and Malkin and Crosby and Sullivan at the practice this year, giving it to each other. Or,
or Malkin
know, Sullivan
and Kessel going at it. Yeah.
That's a blunt, honest team. And I think that's one of the reasons why they win. This could simply be Mike Sullivan saying, all right, Phil, here's a warning shot. Be ready.
What do you do with it?
Be ready.
Vegas eliminates the San Jose Sharks. I want to focus on Vegas quickly and then dovetail with what happens next for San Jose. Big decisions there. One of the things that I really love about Vegas, and we saw this in that series, teams that understand the best defense is keep the puck in the other team's zone. We saw a Vegas team and have seen a Vegas team all season long that hasn't taken the foot off the pedal, regardless of what the score is, where many teams would sit back and say, you know what, we're up two pucks, we're going to defend, we're going to lob it out to the neutral zone, we're going to jump in front of shots, we are going to protect this lead. Vegas says no. Vegas says, let's keep going for it and keep the puck down there. Elliot, I love that.
I do too. I really love watching them play. And the other thing too that was interesting to me was, so Ryan Reeves gets in for the first time in the playoffs for Carrier, and in the third period protecting a lead.
He's out.
A lot.
Yeah.
Coaches don't use their fourth lines that much anymore that way, and he did. Now, I think fourth lines play more than they used to because, you know, you have to. Like even Bob Murray said, you know, Randy Carlyle didn't use his fourth line a lot. I'm going to have to find him some players where he can do that next year. But in that game in San Jose where he didn't have the matchup, Gerard Gallant was throwing Ryan Reeves in that fourth line on the ice.
You think fourth lines are changing in the sense that that used to be the line where you buried your mistakes?
Yes.
And that is very much going the way of the dodo bird in the NHL now?
Yeah, everybody's got to play now. The game is so fast. You can't have dead spots on your bench. Everybody's got to be able to play. But that was the thing that blew me away about Gallant. Like, he wasn't afraid. I'm putting Ryan Reeves in the lineup where I'm going to use him. And I'm going to use him in the same situation I would use my fourth line any other game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's coaching because you're confident in your ability, not because you're afraid. And I think that's the way coaching has to be.
More on Vegas in the coming weeks here on the podcast. Meantime, San Jose Sharks, what is next? And does the decision begin with what do we do with Joe?
I think the biggest decision they have is, what are they spending their $20 million on? I think they're going to get a seat at the table for John Tavares.
For sure.
And a couple years ago, they made a very quiet pitch for Stamkos. And I think if Stamkos wasn't going to Tampa, he was going to San Jose. Or at least there was a good chance he was going there. But I think his heart was always in Tampa. But I wouldn't be surprised if, of all the teams that met with Stamkos, San Jose was the one that was the next best option.
Let's go down that road. Let's say San Jose is successful, they win the John Tavares sweepstakes. Does that mean there is no room at the inn for Joe Thornton? And we'll get to Evander Kane here in a second.
No, I don't necessarily believe that. Like, Thornton played for $8 million this year. What does he want to play for?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you get John Tavares, they can win a Stanley Cup.
Yep.
And then you look at Kane. Do they want to bring Kane back? And the one thing that really helps you with Thornton is you're probably going a year to year. In a year, they have to decide to extend Logan Couture and Joe Pavelski. You know, you're in that situation with those guys, too. Thornton helps you in the fact that he's probably on a year-to-year basis right now.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get Tavares, I'm sure that what Doug Wilson's going to do is he's going to talk to Joe Thornton. He's going to say, look, I need you to wait. I've got a plan. And I have to get through that plan and see what I do. I think the biggest question is going to be, last year there was interest in Thornton. The Leafs were there. The Rangers were there. I'm sure other teams were there, too. And he stayed. How much interest is there going to be this year?
When you consider specifically the knee injury, and it's not to the knee that was injured last season, well, the other knee.
There's that. But also, you know, the Rangers probably aren't in that game now.
They'll be in the Tavares game, though.
Yeah, but they won't be. They're probably in the Thornton game. Would Toronto be in the Thornton game now?
They were last year. I don't know that they would this year.
I don't know that they would. Now, the other thing, too, about Thornton that's interesting is I heard a story during the year that one of the reasons he didn't leave San Jose last year was because coming back from an injury, San Jose knows him, their doctors know him, their therapists know him. Rehabbing there is easy for him because he knows them.
Right.
And I heard that he was worried if he went somewhere else and he wasn't healthy, it would be a waste for that team. And I was told that some teams really appreciated that Thornton took that approach. They thought it was very good of him. If he's in the same situation this year, did the same rules not apply?
One would think yes.
Yes. Unless the decision is made for him that San Jose doesn't want him back, then I expect to see him back.
You don't think he'll go cup hunting a la Ray Bourque?
First of all, who knows who could win the cup anymore? And secondly, like, San Jose, depending on what they get, they're a decent bet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a pretty good team.
And they've got a lot of youngsters encouraged by what you saw from Tomas Hertl.
And Meyer.
Timo Meyer. I think Marcus Sorensen looked real nice. Donskoy looked nice as well, certainly towards the end of the season. I know people were hot and cold on him during the playoffs. So it's not as if, you know, at the end of this, it's tear it all down and build it up again. Still a whole lot of there.
Yes.
Let's pause, come back and talk about the Boston Bruins and Brad Marchand next. The all-new 2018 GMC Terrain is the compact SUV thoughtfully designed with you in mind. With features like the Traction Select system to revolutionize how you adapt to the road, a fold flat front passenger seat to give you up to 8 feet of cargo space, and an innovative electronic precision shift system to make shifting easier than ever, the 2018 GMC Terrain is truly mighty like a pro. GMC, we are professional grade.
All right, quiet, because this is very important.
What?
For our last story today, we turn to the age-old problem of face licking. For generations, athletes have been involved in face licking. The most recent example came last night in the Boston-Toronto playoff game.
Nasty.
Boston's Brad Marchand face-licked Toronto's Leo Komarov.
And then this just gets gross again. I don't know what's going through Marchand's mind. I mean, licking an opponent under the nose is not something I would recommend. And look at Callahan's look here. He just is like, I can't believe that happened. The referees, again, have a conversation with Brad Marchand. And as Pierre said, it's not the first time we've seen
these
examples.
I'd go right and take a shower.
It's not good.
I would probably sucker punch the guy.
There's no question.
That's unbelievable.
I would, too.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I don't know what goes through his head like there. I mean, I'd rather have him punch him in the face than lick him in the face. So that's just, there's no need for that. There's no licking in hockey.
I don't know what the difference between that is and spitting in somebody's face. And if I'm not mistaken, spitting is a game misconduct, if not a gross.
How would you feel if I walked over to you right now and just gave you one big lick right from the chin all the way up? Yeah. See, that's pretty sure how Callahan felt. It's just no place in the game for that.
Okay, so we've talked about the San Jose Sharks. We've talked about the Pittsburgh Penguins. Let's talk now about another team who is no longer in this year's edition of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and that is the Boston Bruins. And touchpoint, you can't talk about the Bruins this postseason without mentioning Brad Marchand. The licking, hello Komarov, hello Callahan, the subsequent drama.
He gives a licking but is no longer ticking.
He is no longer ticking. That's true. The most famous nose in the NHL outside of, well, I guess since Colby Armstrong, who, by the way, I once described as the only man in the NHL who could smoke a cigarette standing in the shower. He had a sense of humor about it, thankfully for Colby. But how do you read Brad Marchand this year in the playoffs?
First of all, he's an MVP-level player. There's no question about that. It's interesting to me, like, he wasn't himself in Game 5. And I think there were people in Tampa. He was doing a slow burn that series. Game 2, he was on the breakaway, got slashed by Strahlman, no call, he was mad.
Yep.
Game 3, he got the slashing penalty, and that made him mad because he didn't get the one in the previous game. Game 4, obviously, was the lick. Game 5, I think people expected him to be the best player on the ice, and he wasn't himself. As a matter of fact, Kelly showed some plays where he didn't hit when he normally would have. So I think he wasn't there a bit. And seeing him go after, like, the Canadians, that one, I mean, the Canadians walked into that one. Like, they made the joke about licking on a golf course.
Don't throw that dart.
He's like, hey, guys, you were out of the playoffs in October. You walk into that one.
But they went after media guys,
well,
too.
Well, and I don't, it's not that I'm sticking up for media guys, because I think if you, in social media, if you wade in, you open yourself up to being attacked back.
Yeah.
But I think, like, those two guys, Joe Haggerty and Eric Engels, I don't think they were taking shots at Marchand. I think they were kind of actually agreeing with him.
Mm-hmm.
But Marchand's got a really good sense. Like, a lot of guys don't like him. I totally understand. He's injured players. He's a trash talker. Hey, that all comes with the territory. But a lot of guys say he's really funny and he's a good teammate. And I know a lot of guys on Team Canada at the World Cup were really impressed by him.
Loved them.
For him to take the shots that he did at those two guys, that said to me this was all in his head and he was very sensitive. I have never known Brad Marchand to be overly sensitive. And that said to me that whatever happened to him this year in the playoffs, it got to him. And I saw his quotes from the Bruins breakup day where he said, I've got to cut that bleep out. If I'm the Bruins, I'm just sitting down asking him, like, Brad, you know, what happened here? Like, why did this get to you? If you want to go after media guys, whatever, but why did you feel the need to do that? Because you've never really done it before. I always look for behavior that's out of character.
Yeah.
And this is out of character for him. Why?
One thing I do want to mention about the licking. Can't believe I just said that. This year's playoffs have been weird. I really think we need to climb down off the cross on this. Like, was it gross? Yes. Watching Brad Marchand lick Ryan Callahan. Okay, it's nothing that we ever expected to see in hockey. But can we not for a moment consider what happens on the ice and what is said between players on the ice and how players on the ice treat one another, either in a violent fashion or in a despicable fashion, in a gross fashion? Can we just calm down this idea that this is the most egregious thing we've ever seen one player do to another?
Well, a lot of that is social media because it gains a life of its own, right? And everybody feels that they've got to chime in on it. But it's disgusting.
Yes, like, of course it is. Like, and listen, a lot of things that go on the ice are.
No, this is different.
Hang on, every time you see a cowbell, a guy getting speared in the testicles, do you not think to yourself, you know what? We laugh at it, it's on the highlights. Oh, look, oh yeah, he got him with a sundae. That's awful.
Yes, I get that, Jeff. And, you know, there were people saying, how come people are so upset at licking and when Tom Wilson knocks out a guy, people aren't as upset about that? Yeah, I get all of that argument. I do think there's something to be said for when you play hockey, you accept some risk. Not that.
Guys spitting on each other's skates at the draw?
Yeah, but that's also not in your mouth and on your face. I think you understand that when you play hockey, you're going to take a borderline hit here to there. And you're going to get speared somewhere here and there, but you're not expecting that someone's going to lick you from your neck to your forehead.
Yep.
It's gross. It just is.
Yes, I'm not disputing that. I'm agreeing with you 100%.
Mm-hmm.
But on the scale of horrible things that happen on the ice, can we stop pretending that on a scale of 1 to 10, this is Spinal Tap 11? Can we stop?
I got to tell you this. Injuries, things that lead to injuries are obviously worse than that. I would just say this. I think most people would find that just as if you were to ask anybody, not anybody, let's do it Family Feud style, whether hosted by Richard Dawson or Steve Harvey.
All right.
If you were to do a survey of 100 people,
Yeah. You
can tweet this at Jeff and I. Do a survey of 100 people.
Yeah.
What percentage would rather be hit in the head or licked?
I'll take the lick.
And I don't want to joke about concussions. They're serious, but
Yeah. Hey. How hard, knowing what we know about concussions?
No.
I don't know anyone's ever been concussed by a lick.
Take a big hit.
Yeah.
Or speared in a sensitive area.
Yeah.
Or licked.
I'll take the lick.
I bet you it's closer than you think.
If you've ever had a concussion, you'll take the lick.
I've had a concussion before.
Would you rather have? That type of hit or a lick?
You'll
take the cocky? Really?
I can't answer that. Like, I think that is like... And there's a lot of germaphobes out there.
Yeah.
I guarantee all the germaphobes won't take the lick.
Yes.
Howie Mandel will not take the lick.
Don't take the lick. There's the new hashtag for the podcast.
There you go. Tweet the answer at Jeff and I.
Curious.
Do
hashtag
take
don't
the
take
lick
the lick.
Or the spear.
Yeah.
Or a heavy hit. The lick, it's disgusting.
It's bad. Okay, so off the ice now. Plenty to get to. Our weekly Carolina Hurricanes update actually has something to it. And one of them is really curious for me. Rod Brindamore announced as new head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. A little bit of surprise. I thought maybe Vellucci had that sort of wrapped up. Rod Brindamore gets it. And dovetailing it is the quietest announcement of a general manager that I've ever seen, as Don Waddell is announced as general manager and team president, almost as if it is an aside in parentheses at the bottom of a press release.
Well, they kind of had said that there probably was going to be no GM hired. So we should have been prepared for it. When a couple of weeks ago, I think it was the day after the draft lottery got out that Steve Greeley had said no and they couldn't reach a deal with him, I emailed for a statement and Dundon said we will likely not be hiring a GM. So I wasn't as surprised by it, but it was interesting. I'm not surprised. I think that there was a certain section of people who believed that Don Waddell was going to end up as the GM from the beginning. And so I'm not as surprised by that outcome.
Is this more because people in the market weren't as interested in the Carolina job as they would have with other positions based on things we discussed on this podcast before, compensation perhaps being one of them? Like, how desirable was this job based on what you knew you were walking into?
Well, I think that the job lost its desirability for a couple of reasons. Number one is that the money, and number two is the power. Like, Tom Dundon is going to be the power broker there. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, like, there were people who wanted this job because there's only 31 of them, and people want to be GMs, and he had a lot of interest. You know, He talked to Mike Fiuta. He talked to Greeley. He talked to John Ferguson. He talked to Bill Zito. He talked to Lawrence Gilman. I believe one of the names that hasn't been reported yet that he talked to was Scott Housen from Edmonton. There were a lot of people that they talked to. I think the other thing, too, is I think Dundon himself went through a situation where, you know, he would talk to guys and he wasn't sure. Like, one moment he liked them, then one moment he liked what he had, and you know, I just think at the end of the day, he decided, look, he's paying Waddell a salary to be a president. Waddell's been a general manager before, and he can do the job. And I think he was happy to bring in Rick Dudley to find players. I think Tom Dundon is a guy who says, and I think there's some owners who feel this way now, too. The GMs and the coaches have won the salary battle in the NHL.
Yes.
They really have.
Yes.
They have moved the needle and moved the line a long way. And Dundon's belief is he thought it was crazy. And he said, I shouldn't have to pay that much, and he's going to try it this way. Who God only knows if this is going to work. But I will say that I think privately some owners are rooting for it to bring the salary pendulum back a little bit.
Right. Is that like the 2010 Stanley Cup final where every general manager said, hold on, look what Chicago just did against the Philadelphia squad. The common denominator there is you don't need an expensive goaltender to win the Stanley Cup or to get to the final. Let's stop paying goalies.
And how often has that worked really well?
It does.
Yes, it doesn't work really well.
Finish this sentence. If you're a Carolina Hurricane fan, you are feeling blank about your team's moves this week.
Well, I think you're excited about Brindamore. You know, it's not like this is a guy who hasn't coached. He's been on the bench for a while now. And I think now the most important thing for a head coach is you can hire people who can do the X's and O's. Will your players play for you?
Mm-hmm.
And I think players will play for Rod Brindamore.
You have a thought on a small move between the Carolina Hurricanes and the Arizona Coyotes, Marcus Kruger for Jordan Martinook?
We got Chicago East and Chicago West, eh? That's Arizona and Carolina.
Now, is that to what we were talking about a couple of weeks ago about being tougher to play against more than anything else?
Yeah, well, I do think that, and it's funny, like I was reading some of Brindamore's quotes, and he was kind of talking about that a little bit too. There's a couple of people I spoke to who really like Martinook as a role player. They think he's a good player. Kruger, I just refuse to believe last year is a true indication of what he is as a player.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess there was some injury issue there, and that should help. I got to think that Hjalmarsson would have had a lot to do with saying, this is what we're getting, and we can do it.
Excellent point. Toronto Maple Leafs, speaking of weekly updates,
yeah.
How was your weekend?
So obviously Nick had the big story about Matthews and Babcock, and Babcock went to Arizona on a family trip. And before I, you know, reported it that he was going to meet with Matthews, I asked, like, are we making a big deal out of nothing here? And I asked a bunch of guys, and they said to me, it's fast. Like, it's normally you wouldn't ask to speak to your players this quickly. And they said it's fast, but they understood. They're kind of like, with this story out, maybe they wanted to get on top of it and find out what the truth was. And I had a GM, and I've said this in a couple of radio interviews already, and guys are like guessing, okay, is the GM this guy? And yeah. I'm never going to tell anybody. But he called me on Sunday morning, and he said, look, if there is a problem, this is what they should do. Because he said 2 years ago, he had a problem with his coach and his player, and he said, I'm going to give them 2 months just to get away from each other. And then I'm going to send the coach to meet the player, and it'll be bygones are bygones. Time will heal all wounds, and it'll all go away. And he said the exact opposite happened.
Because he had 2 months to stir.
And he was around his family, who was like, your coach is killing you. And he said the agent didn't help the problem either. And by the time the coach got to see the player, it's too late. Now, I think the interesting thing about all this is that I'm not sure that Babcock would have done this earlier in his career. I think it's a little bit different for him. Don said on the end of the night, it means that Babcock is scrambling a bit. I don't see the big deal. If you think that I may not have handled it this way before, but I think it's better if I handle it this way now, I don't have a problem with that. You have to do what is best. This is your star player.
Yeah.
You have to do what's best. Doesn't matter if the coach and player don't get along.
No, this is the Scotty Bowman rule. 364 dates of the year, the players hated him. On day 365, they got their rings.
Yep.
So the answer is no, much like...
We all hate our bosses.
You don't have to, except for our boss, whom we love unconditionally. You know, you don't have to like someone you're doing business with.
That's right.
Is ultimately one of the great lessons that you learn, hopefully, early in your career. But let me ask you this. And this is one of the reasons I love Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan.
Yeah.
Is Bob treats many of his topics as power topics.
Yes.
Who's on top? Who's on bottom? Who's getting screwed? You know, what is the power dynamic here? If I were to channel my inner Bob McCowan and say, what has happened to a power dynamic between a head coach and his young superstar player? How should I be feeling about Mike Babcock and Austin Matthews now that early in this offseason, Mike Babcock has gone to repair, if that is maybe too strong a word, I apologize, but go to repair a relationship that may or may not be broken. This is further to Don Cherry's point.
Yeah.
Is there something to that? If you are going to the player, what does that do to that dynamic?
No.
Does that hand him an extra card at the poker table?
I don't buy that because in the summer, coaches often go and visit their players. I remember Pittsburgh talking about how Dan Bylsma went to Russia to visit Malkin one summer.
But this is over a very specific issue, though.
Yeah, but I think that's always the case. What are the complaints? That Matthews didn't start the game, that he wasn't on the first power play. The tough thing about the first power play is that they had a great power play.
Yeah.
What was it, second best in the league? Like, I mean, it's tough to complain about that.
Yeah.
I mean, if your power play wasn't working.
Line matchups.
You know, he didn't play a ton. Pretty soon, they're going to make Austin Matthews one of the highest-paid players in the league, and they're going to have to play him a ton.
And probably make him captain.
I got no problem with that either. I think Matthews is a great player. It's hard not to overreact because it's Toronto, but you're going to go through some adversity. Look at Crosby, man. How many years of adversity you go through between that first Stanley Cup and the second and third ones?
Oh, yeah.
A lot.
And an injury that almost ended his career.
Injuries, people ripped him, like he was the reason they were losing. It was everything. You're going to go through trouble. And, you know, the one thing I think about Matthews is, this is the first time he's going through it. And he's going through it on the big stage. Wendell Clark had the great line about Toronto. Jamie Baker told me this. When Jamie Baker got traded to Toronto, Wendell Clark pulled him aside and he said, two things you got to know. You're never as bad as they say you are, and you're never as good as they say you are. Mm-hmm. Well, Matthews might be as good as we think he is.
Yeah.
But when he goes through this, it seems like it's bad. It's not that bad. And it will make him a better player.
All right, Elliot, take a quick pause, come back, and finish up with some Ask 31. Tired of subscribing to multiple streaming services to get your sports fix? Introducing Sportsnet Now. Live stream the entire Stanley Cup playoffs, the Blue Jays, Raptors, and NBA, Premier League, MasterCard, Memorial Cup, and much, much more, all in one subscription. You can stream on the go or at home on your big screen from the most popular devices, including smartphones, tablets, Apple TV, Xbox, and Chromecast. Sign up for as long as you want and cancel whenever you'd like. Get the best bang for your buck with the sports streaming subscription that gets you the most content. Visit snnow.ca for more details. All right, here we go. Elliot, hashtag Ask31 from Joe Cazera. Any indication if the Sabres will shelter Dahlin, limit media, or sign a veteran Swede, etc.?
Veteran Swede, maybe. I honestly don't know, but I don't think you can really shelter guys anymore. I'm sure they're going to try to limit it, like the amount of stuff he does. They'll try to focus him on playing, but it's really hard to shelter guys now.
You know, I wonder if they'll do the Shane Gostisbehere thing with him. I mean, his first year with the Philadelphia Flyers, I mean, he wasn't drawing top assignment, a lot of power play time. Like, Dave Haxel did a really good job with Shane Gostisbehere in that rookie season.
And Nolan Patrick.
100%. I wonder if it's the same thing for Rasmus Dahlin in Buffalo. I would suspect yes. I don't know that I want to throw this guy out against top competition too early in this season. Having said that, every time you place a hurdle in front of it, he jumps over it.
You don't want to baby great players. You know, you dip their toe in the water, you throw them in once in a while, you pull them back out.
Nah, you like how the robins do it with their kids. You know, the egg cracks, the baby comes out, you throw it out of the nest, and you say you're either going to die or you're going to fly. Take your pick.
Emil, can I do a back when I covered the NBA story? Am I allowed to? Okay.
You get one
show. Okay, so I remember first year of the Raptors, Damon Stoudemire was Rookie of the Year, right? One night they played Utah early in the season, and it was John Stockton, one of the greatest point guards in NBA history. And Stoudemire in the room after was despondent. And Willie Anderson, who was a veteran on that team, walked up to him and said, "What's wrong with you?" And he goes, "I have never had my butt kicked like that. I have never had a guy just tear me apart like that." And Willie Anderson goes, "That guy is John Stockton. He's going to the Hall of Fame. You think you're the only guy?" He says, "You're a rookie. He kills veterans."
Yeah.
And he talked about some of the guys early in his career that destroyed him. And, you know, Stoudemire, he had some tough nights, but he was Rookie of the Year. That's going to happen to Dahlin. He's going to have some nights next year where he's going to look like a superstar.
Look, he's playing against Tampa, against Boston, against Toronto.
He's like gonna have nights where he's gonna look terrible. that's part of it.
This comes from Jeff at NHL Flames Fan. Will the Jets' current playoff run and the fact that Paul Stastny waived his no trade to go to Winnipeg kill the narrative that players don't want to play there?
I think it really helps that guys like Byfuglien and Wheeler, American players, sign contract extensions there. You know, the one thing I really do believe to the questioner is that people will go anywhere where you think you can win.
Yeah.
And, Emil, here you go again. Covering the Raptors, you always heard that guys didn't want to come to Canada. Well, Vince Carter signed a contract extension there, and Hakeem Olajuwon agreed to be traded there because they thought they could win.
Yeah.
When you're that good, people will come there. But I think when you get guys like Wheeler and Byfuglien and Paul Stastny waving, and people see what it's like to compete there in a playoffs like that, yes, it changes it. Now, if Winnipeg ever goes through a situation where it's out of the playoffs for 5 years, they'll have trouble just like anybody would in that situation.
Edmonton went through that too.
Yes.
From Mike Bond, think Chiarelli makes a big move this summer, i.e. Klefbom or Nurse or RNH. Could he make a big move without the okay from above?
Yes, I think he has some authority to make the moves. I'm on record as saying I think there could be something with Klefbom. I don't see them trading Nurse. I thought he had a really good year.
He was excellent for
And him. The way Chiarelli talked, it would surprise me if he traded Nugent Hopkins. He made it sound like Nugent Hopkins was a big part of their team.
From John Conboy, can Elliott expand on what he means by GMs managing up? And he references Gar Snow in the tweet as well about being good at managing upwards.
Managing your owner. And the guy who's going to have to do that right now is going to be Don Waddell. And I think that's one of the reasons that Don Waddell is the GM, because he understands how to do it, what he's dealing with already. You know, I had a conversation this year with Jim Neal, and I asked him, what's the biggest thing you learned as a general manager in the NHL? And he said, the biggest thing I learned was that it's not about necessarily about hockey and finding players. It's about managing your organization. Teams are worth multi-millions of dollars. The owners are investing big cash in there, and they want things to happen a certain way. You're the conduit between the owner and everybody else. You have to manage that owner.
Have we seen the last Jeff Vinnick in the NHL? All new owners want a say in how their team behaves, true or false?
I think that he will be the minority. I wouldn't want to say the last, because you always, like Bill Davidson, the owner of Tampa,
yeah.
Two owners before him was the same way. He was like, whatever, I'm not going to bother you. And he let his team just run itself. But I think he's definitely going to be in the minority.
From Dale Hunter's Helmet, great Twitter feed, bud. I've heard you talk about the rules of stick length and curve, but what about flex? I don't think there's anything about flex at all.
There's a maximum.
Is there a max flex?
Yes, Chara has a special.
Oh, for how stiff it is.
Yeah, Chara.
I think our at Dale Hunter's Helmet is talking about flexes like, you know, 45 or 50 flex.
I don't think there's a limit. I know at the top there is. Like, Chara needs a special permission to use the crowbar that he uses.
It's just unbudgeable.
First of all, that would be hilarious if somebody came out with, like, you know, remember Revenge of the Nerds, the special pole vault?
Yes.
Special javelin they had? That, you know, I know I'm really dating myself with that reference. Google it. But I don't know if there's a minimum.
Remember, whenever I hear questions about flex, I remember talking to Daniel Briere once, who said, you know, this is how much strength, you know, we lose over the course of a season. I begin the year after working out all summer, I think of a 100, maybe 110 flex stick. And by the end of the year, I'm down to an 80. Because I need my stick to do more of the work for me, which I just can't do because your body just gets broken down over 82 games.
Mm-hmm.
That's someone, by the way, we should have on the podcast. Daniel Briere. Write that down. Emil.
You know, I didn't realize he's running the ECHL team.
You know who he's doing this with? It's the main squad.
Yes.
The ECHL.
Yeah.
And you know who's there with him?
Who's that?
Riley Armstrong. Colby's brother.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Briere's
from
smart guy, man.
Yes. From Ben Branson. The next big crackdown by the NHL will be cross checks to the back. Thoughts? Cross checks to the back. Somewhere Tim Kerr says, oh, now you're going to do the crackdown?
It's Craig
Somewhere,
Simpson, too.
Craig, Dino Cicerelli, Thomas Holmstrom. I'll say, now you want to do the crackdown?
I don't know. I don't know. What do you think?
No, I don't.
I don't see that as being
I don't
one
know
of their
that you,
big issues.
I don't know that you see it much anymore. Now it's all about fronting in front. When I think cross checks, I'm just thinking about it, the battle in front of the net. But the battle is just to get in front.
Chris Pronger.
Oh, it was just vicious.
Yeah. Darian Hatcher, man. That guy was a killer.
Oh, yeah. He was the guy that rang the bell out of 205. Like, coming out of the lockout of 205, there were a couple of guys that actually won. And Darian Hatcher was one of them. Do you remember this? Because he had just signed, I think it was a four-year deal with Detroit. Had played the 1 year. And then because it had to become cap compliant,
yeah, they
had
bought
the bought him out, and then signed a big ticket like a week later with the Philadelphia Flyers.
Yeah, the Flyers signed him and Mike Rathje.
Because they didn't believe the crackdown was sticking.
Yes, that's true.
Okay, of this year's non-playoff teams, which do you think is most in need, this is from Deesh, most in need of qualifying next year for the sake of their fan base? Before you answer, can I submit New York Islanders?
Yeah, I got to tell you, that Lamoriello thing, there's something there. I don't know where it's going to go, but there's something going on there.
Because if you lose John Tavares and then bottom out and there's no playoffs, you can sell them.
At least you have Barzal and two first-rounders, right?
Like
You can say that for their fans. How long has it been since Carolina's been in the playoffs? 9 years?
Yeah.
They need it.
Florida Panthers?
They look good.
St. Louis?
St. Louis will be interesting. I think they'll be in the Tavares conversation, too.
Dallas?
Dallas, I think the organization needs it because I think the owner is impatient.
Yeah.
Like, I could see the owner being very impatient with what's going on there. But I'm trying to think the one that needs it most for their fans, Arizona.
Because of the second half?
Arizona needs a win for its fans, right? It's always a battle. The way they finished the second half of the season, like, you can see it. I'm amazed by Arizona's fan base. Like, there are some real hardcore fans there.
It's true. And I hear from on Twitter all the time.
Oh, yeah. And it's never been easy there. Like, the Canadians make fun of your team all the time. And they got some good young players there.
Yeah.
They really have some talented young players there. I think if any fans deserve a reward, it's probably them. That Pacific Division is going to be really interesting because Vancouver's going to be rebuilding and Edmonton and Calgary are going to want bounce backs. And like, there are some teams there. You never know what to expect from them on a year-to-year basis.
What do you think happens if Vegas doesn't make the playoffs next year?
I don't know.
Nothing, or they just surf on, this is great.
That owner pushes. Like, I don't think that's an owner's going to be satisfied with not making the playoffs.
Because you look at the Avs, they move from Colorado, pick up Patrick Waugh, and all of a sudden they're winning the Stanley Cup. Spoil a fan base early or what?
But if anybody's on a roll of good luck right now, it's Vegas's fan. As you know, in Vegas, sometimes, eventually, when you got to pick up and walk away from the table, like, you're wondering, are they going to get to the point where they're going to have to walk away from the table?
Elliot, you've been there plenty of times,
yes.
I'm sure. The house always wins.
I remember this one guy once. I was sitting there, and this guy comes up, and he's obviously drunk, and he goes, I've been losing tonight. And I'm like, okay. He goes, I'm pulling out $500 right now, and I'm betting it. I don't even care what my hand is. And we're sitting there playing blackjack. And he gets a 2 and a 3, and the dealer pulls an ace. He's like, double down. I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, my luck has been so bad that I don't care if I lose. It has to change. I said, have you ever heard of gambler's fallacy?
Yeah.
And he goes, no, what's that? You've been drinking. So I'm like, well, I don't know why I'm bothering explaining this. It's like, your luck is bad, so you think it's going to change.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
That was the one I've never seen like that before.
This one comes in to us. We'll conclude on this one from someone who would like to be referred to as an anonymous hockey person.
Okay.
The most that I can reveal is this is from someone who is a relatively recent hire in the NHL.
Okay.
When you've talked about this before, when do you think hockey players will start individually expressing themselves with style or thought in more open ways like soccer or basketball? You've maintained it is already afoot and it is changing.
It's coming. I know. I do think it's changing, but it will be more often. Because I'll tell you one thing. It's interesting. Like, one of the reasons that Subban had some criticism in Montreal, I found out later, was that he had a lot of side deals. He'd have an event and he'd get paid a certain amount of money.
No.
And a lot of other guys didn't have that.
So hustle.
Well, that's exactly it. Like, if someone said to me, why are the other players complaining about it? You're a Montreal Canadian. You can do whatever you want for money.
Yeah.
And I think more players are starting to see that.
See, I hate when I hear stories like that. You know, I've always maintained if you take two lines, okay, like take a pencil, okay, draw two lines, make one line farther than the other line. A great test is hand someone that pencil and say, make these two lines the same size. You know what a lot of people will do?
What's that?
They'll flip it over and use the eraser to make the long line shorter.
Okay.
Instead of using the lead and making the short line longer. It's a great psychological test. Mm. Which end of the pencil do you use? Do you try to make a line longer to make them the same size or use the eraser to make the long line shorter? And when I hear an example like that, Elliot, I think to myself, those are small brain guys saying, you know what? Let's just make the long line shorter.
I think it's also the way the game has been taught for a long time is nobody's bigger than the team. And now I think people are saying, you know what? Why are you getting mad at PK for that as opposed to why are you saying, I'm going to do that myself?
Go do it.
And I think that's what we're starting to see. And I think the way the players express themselves, it's going to get there. It is absolutely 100% going to get there. You know, it was a guy who I wish was starting over his career now because I think he would be a social media star.
He's Gump Worsley. Gump Worsley.
No, he's at the end of his career now. But I think if he had broken in now, he would be one of the guys to break it. He's in the playoffs now, but he's probably in his last year. Maybe in his last year. Joe Thornton would be another one, but he wasn't the guy I was thinking of. Scott Hartnell.
Yes. Oh, I agree with that 100 times.
Like, if Scott Hartnell's career was starting now, he would be a social media superstar, I think.
Agreed. Best of luck to the Preds. Best of luck to the Winnipeg Jets. Perhaps by the time you listen to this podcast, that series will have been concluded and we will know our final four. Meantime, wrapping up, thanks to John Walton for dropping by, play-by-play voice of the Washington Capitals. And thanks to Emil Delich for keeping us on point, keeping the tasty tunes coming, and making this show sound better than Elliot and I deserve.
Thank you, Emil, for putting up with two when I covered the NBA things this week.
But you know what? Both Elliot and I were on time today for
yes.
the podcast, so he should be
yes,
happy.
Yes, we were.
And thanks, everyone, for the kind words on Twitter about the Brian Burke interview. If you haven't had a chance to listen, normally don't like to brag or boast and had nothing to do with us, but Brian was outstanding. Go back to last week's podcast and give it a listen, even if for nothing else, just to hear the Bob Gainey Serge Savard story, which is wonderful. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for the downloads. Talk to you next week on 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
That's where I've died for charity, because perfect change is what matters to me. Each every penny and stone to the bank, look for a loan on my humble estate. Teddy, Georgie, sweet Benjamin, my terrible friends, they never call or even pretend to worry about me when money is thin. I can't afford someone who can't wait for me. I can't wait to fall.